ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 19 एंटाइटल्ड स्वॉलोइंग द फॉरेस्ट फायर टेक्स्ट 13।
ततश्च ते शिन्य उन्मील्य पुनर्भण्डीरम् आपित निशम्य विस्मित आसान् आत्मनाम् गश्च मोचित। ततश्च ते शिने उन्मील्य पुनर्भाण्डीरम् आपित निशम्य विस्मित आसन् आत्मानाम् गश्च मोचित। ततश्च ते शिन्य उन्मील्य पुनर्भाण्डीरम् आपित निशम्य विस्मित आसन् आत्मानाम् गश्च मोचिता। निशम्य विस्मित आसन् आत्मानाम् कश्च मोचितः।
मातजी
तस्य शिन्य उन्मील्य पुनर्भाण्डीरमापित निशम्य विस्मित आसन् आत्मानं गश्च मोहिता।
ततः देन च एंड ते दैट सॉरी दे अक्षिणी देयर आईज उन्मील्य ओपनिंग पुनः अगेन भांडीरम टू भांडीर आपितः ब्रॉट निशम्य सीइंग विस्मितः अमेज्ड आसन दे बिकेम आत्मानाम देमसेल्व्स गाह द काउस च एंड मोचितः सेव्ड। ट्रांसलेशन द कवर्ड बॉयज ओपन्ड देयर आईज and were amazed to find not only that they and the cows had been saved from the terrible fire, but that they had all been brought back to the Bhandira tree. Will you also read text 14 because this doesn't have a purport?
Krishnasya yoga viryam tad yoga maya anubhavitam davagnir atmana shemam vikshyate me nire maram.
Translation: when the cowherd boys saw that they had been saved from the forest fire by the Lord's mystic power, which is manifested by his internal potency, they began to think that Krishna must be a demigod. Purport by disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan simply loved Krishna as their only friend and exclusive object of devotion. To increase their ecstasy, Krishna displayed to them his mystic potency and saved them from a terrible forest fire. The coward boys could never give up their ecstatic loving friendship with Krishna. Therefore, rather than considering Krishna to be God, after they saw his extraordinary power, they thought that perhaps he was a demigod. But since Lord Krishna was their beloved friend, they were on the same level with him. And thus they thought that they too must be demigods. In this way, Krishna's coward friends became overwhelmed with ecstasy.
Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Ubevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. Let's read the translations again. The coward boys opened their eyes and were amazed to find not only that they and the cows had been saved from the terrible fire, but that they had all been brought back to the Bhandira tree. When the coward boys saw that they had been saved from the forest fire by the Lord's mystic power, which is manifested by his internal potency, they began to think that Krishna must be a demigod. Hare Krishna. We are in an interesting junction of this episode. This is practically a culmination of, you know, three episodes in one sense. So, this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam is very interesting if you see it from a sadhaka's point of view. Now, if you start right from the section where Saubari Muni, interacted with Kaliya for the first time and Garuda, and till this section, you know, where the forest fire has been dissolved by Krishna, there is a sequence, you know, at least that's my understanding, you know, from the point of view of relating to our sadhana bhakti. So Saubari Muni, he was a personality who came to perform, you know, sadhana. He wanted to perfect his life, just like all of us are practicing devotion so that we can perfect our lives. But in the process of perfecting his life, he had some unwanted, you know, anarthas in his heart. One was the concept of thinking great of oneself. Another was the concept of, you know, feeling no need of any external association of devotees. And the third, offending a Vaishnav. So when Saubari Muni did all this, so then what happened was, that's when Kaliya comes into that lake. You know, so that's when envy enters into life. So when envy enters, the result of envy is the forest fire, conflicts. You know, and how do you deal with conflicts? The conflict can be dealt when you actually have Krishna, who is like the center, you know, the bonding factor. Like I give this example of, if somebody has to construct a building, in a building, What do you need? You need bricks, definitely. But if the bricks have to stand together, if you stack up, you know, 300, 400 bricks, and you make it a wall, if you just push that wall, everything will fall down. Because the bricks have no connection with each other. So when the bricks are in between coated with cement, with a fine layer of cement, then you stick the bricks together, they remain forever attached. So similarly, when we live in a community of devotees, when we live, you know, even as families or as, you know, monks staying together or as devotees in a community, the natural need is that we just don't need bricks. We just don't need people. We need people who are bonded together by the cement of Krishna consciousness, the love towards one person. So when that bonding is there, then there is connection which remains strong. So similarly, you know, the way in which the forest fire was dealt with is by connecting with Krishna. As soon as the Krishna factor comes, then the forest fire, the conflict resolves. And the result of the forest fire, you know, I mean, what we are reading just in this verse, what does the Bhandira tree represent? The Bhandira tree represents the enjoying a Krishna conscious lifestyle. That's what Bhandira tree represents. The original Krishna conscious lifestyle. So what the fire represents? Conflicts. So the desire is, whenever in a community there is conflict, the desire is to go back to Bhandira one. To go back to that original state where everybody was enjoying Krishna consciousness. So the concept here is that when you bring Krishna solidly into your lives, then the result is that you go back to your original Krishna conscious state, which is what we entered with, you know. Bhandira one represents our initial ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. And the forest fire represents the acquired, you know, anartha of envy, which comes later when you judge devotees, when you act judgmental, when you start thinking that you are great, when you start thinking that you are advancing and others are not. So, Krishna, by bringing them back to Bhandira one, back to that forest under the tree, Bhandira tree, represents that when you resolve the conflicts using Krishna and centering your life around Krishna, you go back to your original life of enjoying Krishna consciousness. And interestingly, the next chapter which is going to come is the autumn season, the rainy season, sorry. So what does rainy season represent? The rainy season represents spiritual bliss. So when you get free from the material heat of conflicts, you get to experience the spiritual bliss of rains, the mercy. So the whole process of sadhana bhakti is, you know, from Saubari Muni, starting with, you know, practicing sadhana. But if you practice sadhana with a wrong spirit, then you attract envy. And when there is envy in your life, you attract conflicts. And when there is conflict in your life, the only way to resolve conflict is bringing Krishna back in center. So Saubari Muni, Kaliya, the fire, indicates Krishna is not there. And resolving the conflict indicates bring Krishna back into your center. And the first thing that happens when you bring Krishna back to your center is that you get transported to Bhandira one, to the forest of Bhandira, where your original Krishna consciousness is revived. You feel happy. And the immediate result of experiencing the original Krishna consciousness is that it leads to the rainy season, which is the bliss of a spiritual life. So the moment we see we have a negative thought, you know, we have to stop. And we have to question, why this thought is entering into my mind? Just like if there is a robber that enters somebody's house, you know. Now, if a robber enters somebody's house, you're not going to sit quietly and wait for the robber to rob everything and then, you know, then take some action. Go to the police and complain, robber robbed, you know. You might want to do something, right? Especially if it is your own house. If it is somebody else's house, that's a different thing, you know. You're concerned about your own house, at least. So, similarly, our mind is our own property. It's our own house in that sense. So when a negative thoughts enter into the mind, the first thing you have to ask is that, why are you entering? So, because just like, you know, the robber, when does he enter? He enters when there is darkness. The robber doesn't enter during daylight, you know. Of course, nowadays you'll find that also happening. But at least traditionally, robbers wouldn't enter in daylight, right? So, what does darkness indicate? Darkness indicates the lack of the torchlight of knowledge. So, whenever you find that a negative thought is entering into your mind, you have to understand that the mind is filled with darkness. and we have to, which means, and you know, if a negative thought is entering and we are not able to switch on the torchlight, you know, due to whatever reasons, you know, like for example this episode of Ajamil, when he saw the Shudra man and the women embracing, the negative thought was entering, because the negative thought enters through the senses. It was entering and he was trying to recite shlokas. He was trying to remember, you know, whatever, you know, shastric injunctions he could remember. But he couldn't remember much. And even whatever he remembered, it was not really helping him. Why? Because the battery was down. You know? Generally, what happens is that when we don't have constant association with scriptures, when we don't have constant association with you know, hearing sound vibrations, it's like battery being discharged. And that is the time when our mind gets flooded with darkness. And that is the time when negative thoughts can enter. And when negative thoughts enter at that time, you can't put on the torchlight of knowledge because your battery is down. Therefore, there is a constant recharge needed, constant connection with, you know, the scriptural injunctions needed, so that we can actually, whenever negative thoughts come, we can ask, why are you entering, you know. So, we have to analyze the mind using, you know, what we call as a SWAN principle. Four things. Basically, analyze your strength, analyze your weaknesses, analyze your ambitions, analyze your needs. Generally, the mind has a tendency to justify the ambitions as needs. When you justify your ambitions as your needs, then what happens is that there is a tendency of the mind to, you know, feel that everything is right. What you're doing is right. The thoughts that are entering is right, you know. So generally, if when we analyze, we have to see our attachment, is it due to our ambition or is it due to our needs? Many times, ambitions come in between, you know, your needs and your, you know, spiritual life. So what are our needs? Our needs are everything that is connected to devotion, which is actually going to help us advance in our devotional service, is a need. And anything which is periphery to the process of devotion, it is our ambition. Not all ambitions are, you know, necessary. So we have to be very careful with those ambitions that come in between our Krishna consciousness and our needs. Many times in spiritual life, you know, we may decrease our, you know, external wants so much. But within the gamut of Krishna consciousness, we can create a lot of artificial needs, you know. Without this, I can't do my bhakti. Without this situation, I can't practice devotion. Without this situation, I can't do my service properly, you know. These are those ambitions that come in between your, you know, the process of devotion. So one has to be very careful. Is it my need or is it my ambition? And especially if my ambition is in connection with my attachment, then those ambitions are going to come and obstruct my process of bhakti. The situation in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Vyasadev is analyzing his problem, analyzing his own you know, situation. It's a very interesting situation because it's exactly many times what happens in our lives. Vyasadev, if you study, he followed discipline perfectly. Not one Mangalarti he missed, you know, in that sense. Not one sandhya he missed. Not one time he missed his morning bath. Absolutely everything perfect discipline. And, you know, he was following his discipline, studying the scriptures. At the same time, he was also, you know, worshipping his spiritual master. And still he was not satisfied. Now, you know, it might be a situation in our lives also, where we are following discipline perfectly. Perfect attendance in the morning program. Perfect chanting of 16 rounds before 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Everything is over, you know. We may be worshipping our spiritual master practically like God. Sincerely, from the bottom of our hearts, worshipping the spiritual master. We may also be, you know, studying the scriptures scrutinizingly, thoroughly, you know. I mean, we can quote 100 shlokas. We can quote 100 references for every, you know, single concept. But still, it may be possible that we might find dissatisfaction in our lives. Just like Vyasadev here. He found dissatisfaction after doing everything perfectly. That's when Narad Muni had to come into his life and point out where the mistake was. What was the mistake? The mistake was, He was doing everything externally perfectly, but he lost the essence. He forgot Krishna. So many times in spiritual life, we may actually be doing everything perfectly. But the process which we do to perfection, it may be an absolutely mechanical process where we lose Krishna, where we have lost sight of Krishna. And then insensitivity comes in, you know, into our lives, where we deal with devotees insensitively so that projects thrive. Where we deal with, you know, our own spiritual nourishment insensitively so that because, you know, we are too busy, you know, executing some things. So, that is when we need a guide like Narada Muni, who can come and point out, you know, my dear sir, you are doing everything perfectly, but somewhere down the line, you have lost Krishna. And how do you know that you have lost Krishna? How do you know that insensitivity has crept into your life? You know, when you realize that you are dissatisfied. As long as you don't feel dissatisfied, as long as you don't feel that emptiness, as long as you don't feel, you know, the lack of... So as long as you don't feel... So as long as you don't feel the dissatisfaction, as long as you feel spiritually nourished and connected, you can understand that you're going in the right direction. But the moment you feel dissatisfaction, in spite of doing externally everything perfectly, you have to understand somewhere you have lost the Krishna connection, you have lost the essence. You have to come back to the essence. So here in this particular section we find that Krishna is exhibiting mystic power. You know, the boys open their eyes and they see that Krishna has done something magical. The fire has gone and they are back to their original place where they came from. Now, the boys were amazed. So, this amazement happens in many times in our lives also. In the sense that Krishna is doing a lot of magic in our lives also. It may not be magic in a tangible way, the way we think magic is. But there is a lot of transformation that has happened in our personal lives. If we analyze ourselves, you know, 10 years before, 20 years before, there is definitely a contribution of Krishna, the spiritual, the process in our lives. So, if we allowed Krishna to act on us, he can do magic in our lives also. But, if you study, when did Krishna act on the boys? He acted on the boys when they closed their eyes. When the eyes are opened, he didn't act on them. You know, he didn't do any magic. So similarly, what does the boys closing their eyes indicate? You know, it indicates that they exhibited faith. They exhibited faith in the process that Krishna works. In the process that the whole process works. So the difficulty for us is that, you know, close our eyes, that means to have that kind of faith in Krishna, sometimes becomes a little difficult. Especially when we are used to this feeling that, I can do things, you know. So, here, the boys were not ordinary people. They were the highest of Brajavasis. But still, they, you know, closed their eyes, indicating that, I can't do much, let me depend on Krishna. So, basically, when we practice our devotion in a spirit which is filled with faith, and in a spirit which is filled with, you know, enthusiasm, then what happens? We allow the process to act on us. But if we plague our spiritual life with doubts, constantly, you know, at different places, we have doubts, whether this works or no, whether this person what he's speaking is right or no, whether, you know, we have faith in this particular way of doing things or no. Constantly plague our minds with doubts on the efficacy of the process, on the efficacy of the line of authority, on the efficacy of the way in which we are told to do, then what happens? The result is that we don't allow Krishna to act in our lives. Just like, you know, there is a saying that don't wait for inspiration to come. Persevere, and even if you don't feel like doing it, do it. So many times in our spiritual life also, we have to learn to motivate ourselves. Because sometimes we find that, you know, externally, the kind of motivation that we're looking for, it doesn't come all the time, you know. The kind of inspiration we're looking for doesn't come all the time. We have to learn to become independent, self-independent in terms of motivation. Not independent in terms of lacking association or lacking the sangha of devotees, but in terms of motivation. Now, who is going to come and motivate us to do more, to persevere more, to be inspired in our practices? Don't think that Krishna is going to come. And Krishna is going to come on fine day and tell you, abhi aage chalo, thoda aur karo bhakti, you know. We have to motivate ourselves. Everything that we hear, every class that we hear, every, you know, day of devotion that we spend, we have to motivate ourselves to do more, to go one step higher, you know, in our devotion. Krishna has given us free will. The risk from Krishna's point of view is that he has given us free will. You know, people who have no ability to use our free will properly, Krishna has given free will to such people, you know. But the good part is that why he has given us free will, we can use the free will in any way to grow in our spiritual lives. So we can use that very free will that Krishna has given us to inspire ourselves, to push ourselves to do more and more and more. In my initial days in Krishna consciousness, I was inspired by, you know, one personality in our movement, His Holiness Vishnujan Maharaj. When I used to read about his, you know, the way he lived his life, the way he would do his services, I felt that this person is really out of the world, you know, practically. You know, I used to read about how he would, you know, he would be the first one to wake up, he would be the last one to sleep. Practically nobody had ever seen him sleep, you know. We have some devotees like that in our temple also, you know. Some people never see some devotee sleep at all, you know. So Vishnujan Maharaj was one such person. Practically no one saw him sleep at all, you know. And he would do so much all day long, practically 8-9 hours of doing kirtan, and then come back and do services in the temple, very, very menial services many times. And in the night when all devotees go to sleep, he would wash everybody's clothes, you know, dry them. And then the next day morning, he would get up early, press their clothes, and keep them, you know, stacked nicely. And so devotees would be quite amazed what kind of a person this is. And very interestingly, when he would get up in the morning, he would get up much, much earlier than others, and he would wake up everyone by singing for them, you know. He would sing Jiva Jago, in a very melodious voice, you know. Not in a threatening voice, you know, not in a way, you know, y'all are fallen to you, I'm a great person, get up now, you know. Not in that way. In a very, very loving way, in a very, very encouraging way, you know, he would inspire. Now, where do you think that inspiration came from? It's not that it's come from, you know, one source. Of course, Srila Prabhupada is the inspiration for everyone, you know. But why not the same inspiration is there in everyone at the same level? Some people push themselves a little more than others. Why? They recognize the need to push, the need to inspire oneself to grow in one's spiritual life. So ultimately the onus is on us, whether we want to grow or whether we want to go slow, you know. The onus is on us. You can't blame anybody. The environment is created by Srila Prabhupada, the environment is created by the spiritual master and the authorities, but within that environment, how we grow is up to us. So nobody is going to tell, you have to grow only this way, and you can grow only this much. The sky is the limit, how much we can grow. So we have to push ourselves to be inspired. So basically, everything material has three destinations. You take a material body, you take a material object, you take a material situation, or you take a organization. You take anything, it has three, you know, kind of destinations. So one is that you can offer it, or the other is that you can enjoy it, and the third is that it destroys, it gets destroyed. So any situation in life, or any thing in life, goes through these three phases. Either you can offer it voluntarily, or you can enjoy it for yourself, or it eventually gets destroyed. So if we don't learn to offer our material body and enjoy the material body in a spiritual way, in that sense, you know, not in the wrong sense, the third option is that, you know, if you don't, anyway the material body is going to get destroyed, right? So might as well learn to offer it, you know, in the right way, so that it can be used for the pleasure of the Lord. So generally, you know, when a person gets connected to Krishna consciousness, the first stage of Krishna consciousness, I mean, this is applicable for any project, you know, whether it is mundane, or whether it is devotional, and whether it is the process of bhakti also. Every project goes through six phases. And in the first phase is
generally the phase which is enthusiasm, unlimited enthusiasm. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go back to God in this lifetime only, you know. The second phase is disillusionment. The third phase is panic. The fourth phase is that you search for the guilty person, whom to blame, you know. The fifth phase is that you punish the innocent. And the sixth phase is that you praise the person who has not done anything, you know, the non-worthy. So generally, if you see in our spiritual life also, we go through these phases, you know. First, there is enthusiasm. I'm going to do it. And we start practicing with a certain amount of enthusiasm. But then, when we are practicing, there will be obstacles. And those obstacles are meant to create disillusionment. Disillusionment in the sense that the obstacles come to stop us from going ahead in the process. They come to kind of create barriers, impediments in our spiritual progress. Because those obstacles are Krishna's way of testing our sincerity. Krishna doesn't want the wrong people to enter in the spiritual world. You know, Krishna doesn't want actors. Krishna wants genuine, you know, practitioners. Now, it's very easy to act enthusiastic, very easy to act devotional, but very difficult to be devotional, be enthusiastic. So Krishna, he puts these tests through his agency of Mayadevi to create a disillusionment. And when somebody goes through disillusionment, there are two ways to react. One way is to rectify and come back to the right path. The other way is to panic. If you panic, what happens? Panic means, you know, we say, yeah, the process doesn't work, something is wrong. Yeah? And the next tendency is that, what is wrong? Find out what is wrong. The easiest thing to find out what is wrong is, find somebody and blame it on him. Or find some situation and blame it on the situation. What to do? I want to practice bhakti, but situation is not right. What to do? I want to practice bhakti, but this devotee is coming and stopping me, you know. What to do? I want to do it, but, you know, health is not good. So many situations, so many reasons can come, which will, you know, kind of, which we can use as excuses to blame, you know, others or blame situations. And then, the result of blaming situations is that you might punish somebody who is innocent. Or you might blame the situation which is innocent. In the sense, that is not the cause of your problem. The cause is something else. But just because you don't have the guts to admit that that is the cause, you blame something else. And once you have blamed, you found the cause of it, then you relax. After all, it's not my fault. It is this which has caused the problem. So let me relax. Once this situation is rectified, then I can start practicing better. You know, so that's the general tendency. So here, the boys, when they were exhibiting the kind of faith that you know, that they had in Krishna, closed their eyes, which just indicates that if we have faith in the process and we are honest and sincere about following the process, not finding, you know, loopholes, not finding, you know, flaws in it, not finding defects in it, so that, but rather we honestly, sincerely try to practice with full faith and devotion, then what happens is Krishna performs his miracles in our lives, but not in the way we want. You know, the boys, when they told Krishna that they he should help them, now the boys may have had a stereotype understanding of how Krishna is going to help them. Krishna doesn't have to do anything stereotype. But in our lives also, when Krishna has to give us perfection, he has to create some miracle, he doesn't have to do it in a stereotype way. He can do it in the way he wants, provided we allow him to act. If we show our exhibition of faith. So the boys here in Vrindavan, they were taking Krishna to be a demigod, you know, and therefore, I mean, I'm just kind of slightly going to little deeper where we are trying to analyze this situation. It's not from the point of view of, you know, we are not qualified to analyze these boys. We are not qualified to, you know, speak about Krishna absolutely and not about the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam definitely. But if you see it from our perspective, we can learn a lot. So the boys, they were taking Krishna to be demigods. They were, and, you know, and they were saying that they themselves are also demigods in that sense. So they were upgrading themselves and they were downgrading Krishna, you know. Calling Krishna a demigod is not like a appreciation of Krishna. It's actually kind of, you know, downgrading Krishna to a demigod level, right? So in actuality, what they were doing is they were downgrading themselves and Krishna both. How? Because they were not ordinary boys.
They were not even, you know, demigods. They were much, much, much higher than demigods. They were residents of Vrindavan, you know. So the tendency is that, if you see it from our perspective, you know, we have a tendency of taking anything extraordinary to be ordinary. And anything ordinary to be extraordinary. And that is a tendency of a conditioned soul. So, you know, when we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we sometimes have a tendency to take the process of Krishna consciousness as ordinary. Because it's too much exposure, you know. All the time, you know, chanting, dancing and feasting. All the time doing it. So the tendency is that we tend to take the process as something cheap, you know. So when we honor prasad, it's not just about eating prasad, you know. It's about honoring prasad. It's about actually trying to see Krishna through the medium of prasad. Like what we are trying to follow, the culture of hearing Lilamrit while having prasad, sitting in association of devotees while having prasad. What is it for? It's just to keep us aware of the fact that we are doing something holy. We are doing a holy act. We are doing a holy act in the company of holy people. And we are connecting to a holy, you know, substance, which is prasad. So when we constantly remind ourselves that every so-called familiar act of ours is not a simple act, it's a holy act, then what happens is you're kind of reaffirming that this process is not ordinary. It is an extraordinary process given to ordinary people, right? The tendency is that we tend to think that we are extraordinary doing an ordinary process, you know. That's how most people feel, at least that's the way I feel many times. We are special and we're doing an ordinary process. Because we are doing it, the process becomes extraordinary, you know. The process is extraordinary, we are ordinary, right? And when we connect to the extraordinary process, Krishna may make us extraordinary in the sense that, you know, he may use us to do something extraordinary. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is this story of Balabhadra Bhattacharya who went with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know. Just imagine, he comes and tells Lord Chaitanya, he is telling Lord Chaitanya, Bhattacharya tabe kahe prabhu racharane, agya deha yahi kar Krishna darshane. He's telling, but Balabhadra Bhattacharya is telling the Supreme Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is telling, agya deha, give me your, you know, agya, your permission. For what? Yahi kari Krishna darshane. I want to go and have darshan of Krishna. He is asking Krishna that I want to have darshan of Krishna. You know. So the tendency of a conditioned soul is that you are in the presence of Krishna, or at least you are in the vicinity of coming close to Krishna, and then you take permission to go and do something ordinary. You know, thinking that something else is going to help us find our destination. You know, the saying is that, you know, grass is always green on the other side. So wherever you are, you always find that something better somewhere else. The best of the books, the best of the process, the best of the results are here, and the tendency of the conditioned soul is that thinking that yahan pe nahi hai, udhar hai. Even within the process, you know, we have this conditioning of taking the process to be light and searching for alternatives, searching for variations, searching for some kind of, you know, masala, some kind of stuff which is missing in our lives. What is missing? The missing factor is that we saw Vyasadeva's dissatisfaction. The missing factor is Krishna. Everything external packaging is perfect, but the essence of the package is missing. Envelope delivered to the perfect address, but within the envelope, no letter. Right? Gift wrapped perfectly, you know, with ribbon, with satin ribbon, with, you know, with a note. Inside the dabba, nothing is there, you know. So many times our situation becomes that we're following the perfect process in a perfect way, but without catching the essence of the process. That's when we feel dissatisfied. That's when we look for alternative somewhere else, right? That's when we feel that this is ordinary, I want something extraordinary in my life, right? So Guru Tattva it becomes intensified. You know, the Tattva becomes intensified in a place where there is faith, belief, worship and surrender. Now Guru Tattva is available to all of us. But in which personality does the Guru Tattva becomes intensified? We have to study. Srila Prabhupada. It's not that Prabhupada, all of us have spiritual masters. So did Srila Prabhupada. Spiritual masters are exalted personalities who are connected to the spiritual Lord, to the Supreme Lord directly. You know. So was Prabhupada's spiritual master. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his spiritual master also was extraordinary devotee connected to the Supreme Lord. It's not that we don't have that fortune. All of us have the same fortune that Prabhupada had. All of us have the same fortune that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had. What is the difference? The difference is that Tattva, the Guru Tattva, gets intensified in a place or in a person where there is strong faith, strong belief, great amount of surrender and great amount of worship. That's what Srila Prabhupada personified. If you see Srila Prabhupada, you know, because the kind of faith that he had in the spiritual master's words, because the belief that he had in the holy name, because of the kind of the worship that he did to the spiritual master all life long, practically, you know, till the fag end of his life, remembering his spiritual master and offering everything that he got to as a, you know, what do you call it, the credit to the spiritual master, you know. When Prabhupada was asked that, you know, he was speaking many times, and one time he was asked about, you know, so many of his disciples being, you know, connected to him. He said, "I don't see any of my disciples as my disciples. I see them as my spiritual masters." And one time he said that, I know that all of them have been sent by my guru to help me because I am helpless. You know, guru has sent all these people. So constantly seeing the guru, the presence of the Guru Tattva, the presence of the spiritual master's instructions in our lives is, you know, it intensifies the Guru Tattva in our lives practically. So, generally there are, you know, like we're discussing the section of the boys considering Krishna to be a demigod. And, you know, if you see from, you know, our perspective, we find that there are three types of people. One is people who consider themselves to be devatas. You know, what is the meaning of devata? I'll tell you. It's, I mean, just bringing it to a, you know, a practical level. Devata means somebody who is pleasure seeking. You know, so there are people who consider themselves to be devatas, pleasure seeking in nature. So those who are pleasure seeking, they need to change or they need to kind of adopt, and they have to exercise restraint. You know. So there are people who are demonic. Demonic, what does demons mean? Demons means cruel people. So those who are cruel, they have to adopt compassion, become compassionate. And there are humans who are between the demons and the demigods. Humans are miserly, in the sense that they don't want to give. So humans have to adopt the tendency, the nature of learning to give others. So we study from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's perspective, you know, what is Namaruchi, Jivadaya and Vaishnav Seva. This is what it is. Those who are thinking that they are, you know, devatas or pleasure-seeking people, they have to exercise restraint. So, what is the meaning of Namaruchi? Namaruchi means we are seeking pleasure. We are seeking pleasure in chanting the holy names. You know, ruchi, taste for the holy names, you know. So, when we want Namaruchi, we have to also exercise restraint. When we want the pleasure of Krishna consciousness, we also have to exercise restraint in it. The second is Jivadaya. So there is the heart is naturally cruel, you know, insensitive, tough, you know. So the way to rectify that insensitive heart is by being merciful, you know, being compassionate to other living entities. Being compassionate to other living entities is not just about not eating meat. That's one aspect of it. But it is also about being sensitive in one's dealings. Because being sensitive in one's dealings, it makes a person also practice the principle of Jivadaya. Now, the four regulative principles are there for eternal time to come. No meditating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. That's there. On a gross level, when you stop these four activities, you're following the four regulative principles. But on a spiritual level, what does it mean to follow the four regulative principles? It means that we have to expand the horizon of the four regulative principles to accommodate more and more and more. More austerity, more cleanliness, more compassion and more truthfulness. That means even as devotees, you know, externally. If we can expand the horizon of these four regulative principles, then we are actually following it to perfection. And what is the limit of expansion? No limit. Therefore, every time we experience an initiation ceremony where spiritual master is giving diksha to new people and the new devotees are saying that we follow the four regulative principles, we have to keep promising ourselves we have to follow the four regulative principles better. Better than what we were before. We have to exhibit these four qualities better than what we were doing it before, right? That's when we are actually growing in our spiritual understanding. So generally, there are, three types of spiritual disciples or sadhakas. One is, I compare these to three objects, because these objects kind of show the way in which these people behave, One is a stone. Now, one type of disciple or a spiritual aspirant is like a stone, in local language, you can call it as dhela, I heard this, these three categories from one saint many years back. It kind of stuck to my mind, But then I little analyzed it and I found that it really makes a lot of sense from a spiritual master's perspective. So, dhela means stone, patar. So some students behave like stones. In the sense, stone stays in one place forever. Now if you want the stone to move from one place to another, that the person has to lift it and put it in another place. So spiritual master, if he expects this type of disciple to do something, he has to put effort to pick up that fellow and put him somewhere else. And when he puts him somewhere else, there also he stays only. So it requires more effort from the spiritual master's side than, so the disciple is kind of just waiting. Kab mujhe, ek jagah se dusri jagah dalenge. Udhar bhi main udhar wahi karunga, jo main idhar kar raha tha, That's the mindset of the first type of disciple. So this is mostly in the initial state of spiritual life. Initial state of spiritual life, now we just don't understand what to do. We're told, idhar jaake karo. Wahi karte rahenge, ek hi cheez karte rahenge. No application of intelligence. Why? Because the conditioning is so strong. So the material conditioning is so strong that we don't have the facility to think deeper. To think how much I can contribute more. Or to think whether I should contribute more at all. So most people in the initial state of their spiritual life, they are happy to do what they are told. Ek kadam idhar udhar nahi karenge. Bola, bas, yehi karne ka. This is kind of a military regime. It's very nice in the initial stage, but we need to grow a little more. So the conditioned state is that it inspires us to work on ourselves. Inspires us to understand the mindset. Like for example, this story of Gaur Kesha Das Babaji Maharaj, where he kind of made a will or some statement that when I die, my body should be dragged in all the marketplaces. Some Babajis were actually dragging the body, This is the first state. Bola karne ka, as it is. Thoda bhi idhar udhar nahi. No application, no understanding, no thoughts. So they were literally ready to drag the body of Gaur Kesha Babaji Maharaj everywhere. And when Bhaktisiddhanta said, hey, this is not the way he's thinking, they started opposing him. This is a typical, disciple who is like a dhela or a stone. Higher than that is a disciple who is like a cart. It's called thela, So which means that the spiritual master has to push him, So the spiritual master has to keep pushing, and as long as spiritual master pushes, the cart will keep moving, So Srila Prabhupada in his initial phase of his preaching, that's what he was, And all his disciples were like thelas, constantly being pushed. Like in the construction of the Vrindavan temple, we find this story of Surabhi Maharaj, constantly coming to Srila Prabhupada and telling, this doesn't work, that doesn't work, this doesn't work. Prabhupada said, nothing doing, you have to keep doing. And then Surabhi Maharaj finally he said that, at some point, I'm just totally fed up, I just want to sit and chant. Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later, So he kept pushing his disciples on. One time Srila Prabhupada was fed up with the way in which disciples were very slow, So he kind of, in a joking way, he created humor. So all the disciples, they started laughing. And that's when they realized what he said was a very heavy thing,
Prabhupada said, big, big monkey, big, big belly. You know, Ceylon jumping, melancholy. So everybody started laughing, 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 because Prabhupada cracked a joke. You know? And, you know, after some time they realized what Prabhupada actually meant. Prabhupada is saying that, you know, American and European boys, you know, you're saying, you're like big, big monkeys, you know, powerful people, very intelligent, very resourceful, you know, big, big monkeys, big, big belly, you know, eating a lot because you're strong and, you know, you need so much. And then, you know, Ceylon jumping melancholy, you know, that means they are doing so much, I mean, thinking that they are great, but doing nothing, you know, no result only, you know, nothing substantial happening. So Prabhupada was really pushing people to the limit to do more and more and more. You know, one time Srila Prabhupada was with his disciples and he asked his disciples, why didn't you come for chanting? Why didn't you come for kirtan? So one disciple, I'm just trying to tell you how a spiritual master has to keep pushing his disciples to go more and more and more in spite of all their, you know, so-called inertness, you know. So one disciple came to Prabhupada and told him, Prabhupada, I didn't come because, you know, I tried to come in, but there's no place only. So I went back, you know. You know, Prabhupada asked Gargamuni, why you didn't come? Prabhupada said, Gargamuni, he said that, I didn't come because, you know, I felt I would cry, you know, in a kirtan. So, I mean, these are like really weird answers, you know. But Prabhupada didn't give up. He kept, generally the tendency is that, you know, after a certain point of time, you get fed up, you know. Kitna push karenge? Then after that we leave. Chhod do isko. Kuch fayda nahi. Prabhupada never gave up. Because he knew that his disciples were like, you know, thelas. Just keep pushing and pushing. One time, Shyam Sundar Prabhu, he went and bought chandeliers. You know, that costed in London. Cost about 3,000 pounds. After he bought the chandeliers, you know, he showed it to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told the story of this Nawab, you know, who threw these, you know, one of his servants break one glass, crystal piece, and it fell down, and the servant was scared. The Nawab asked him, where the sound came from? So the servant said, the crystal fell. The Nawab said, I like the sound, throw more. So one by one, you know, all the crystals were thrown, all broke. So Prabhupada, he narrated this story, and gave the lesson. He said, Shyam Sundar is like that Nawab, you know. He thinks he has too much money to throw, you know, like that. So kind of, just see how the spiritual master is accommodative and, you know, adopting his disciples to grow. And the third type of disciple is called as Chela. Chela means he is a, you know, apprentice disciple. That means he's like, understands the mood of the spiritual master and functions accordingly, you know. Which means he tries to follow the guru by not bringing ego in between. Follow the instructions of the guru, not keeping his ego in between. And typically the example of Govinda Das and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he was lying down on the doorway, and Govinda Das was massaging him, wanted to massage him, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I can't get up. So he said, I want to go in, please just move a little aside. He said, you step over me and go, you do what you want, you know. So Govinda Das, he put a cloth over him, stepped up and went aside, went into the room, massaged him for hours, and then he was just not going out. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up, he asked him, why didn't you go out? And then he gave the explanation that, I came in because I wanted to massage you, it's your service. I can't go out now because if I go out, I'm transcending you for my enjoyment, you know. So this is a very, the type of disciple who really wants to understand the spiritual master's heart and not just trying to externally, mechanically act, but be sensitive, keeping his ego aside and trying to serve the mission so that the mission can grow and the service to the spiritual master can grow. So, this whole episode of Vrindavan exhibiting a different type of mood, where the boys are showing that faith by closing their eyes, showing that faith by allowing Krishna to act in their lives, is a mood that all of us need to carry with us. Is a mood that as devotees we need to really, really imbibe, because this is a mood that will actually take us one step further in our spiritual lives. Of course, we need to push ourselves to grow one step further, but then unless we have the right mood, we can't really grow. I liked this very sweet poem by Bilwanga Thakur, you know. I'll end with this poem. There's two verses from this poem which really bring out the essence of what Vrindavan is. Where Bilwanga Thakur is talking about how and, you know, with what mood a devotee should pray to Krishna so that Krishna actually steals our heart. This is from the prayers known as Chaurashtakam, the eight verses you know, talking about Krishna being a thief.
He says, Vraje prasidam navanita chauram gopanganam chadukula chauram aneka janmarjita papa chauram chora graganyam purusham namami.
He's telling that Vraje prasidam navanita chauram. How is Krishna known in Vrindavan as the thief who steals butter? And gopanganam chadukula chauram. He says that he is also known as the person who steals gopi's cloth. And then he says, Aneka janmar jita papa choram. He says, my dear Lord, you have stolen so much. You are famous as a thief. Please steal away the sins of my life so that I can experience happiness. I can experience bliss of Krishna consciousness. Because there's so many sins hiding in our lives. And when we see it from the perspective of, you know, the first comparison when I did with Shabarimuni and Kaliya, you know, and the forest fire. We see that in our hearts also there are so many anarthas hiding. God knows in which corners, you know. And for these anarthas to come out, we have to invoke the presence of the thief, who is known for going to dark places and stealing dark things, you know. So, we have unlimited envy in our hearts. We have unlimited anarthas in our hearts. And there are so many things that are unwanted. So, here is Bhakti Balwangal Thakur invoking the presence of the thief. And then he says that what is the process which we can practice to invoke the thief? He says, Yadiya namapi harati ashesham giri prasuran api paparashin ascharya rupo nanuchara idrig drishta shrutova namaya yadapi. He says, the yadiya namapi harati ashesham. He says, that just by chanting the holy names of this thief, what happens? Harati ashesham. It says that this thief steals. What does he steal? Giri prashuran api paparashin. He sees, he has the ability to destroy mountains of sin. And then he says, Ascharya rupo nanu chaura idrik. I have never heard of such a thief in my life. A thief who's just taking the names of such a thief, unlimited mountains of sin can be destroyed. Now for us, the hope for us lies in these two verses, where Krishna is known to be a thief who steals away sins, who steals away the wrong proclivities in our lives. And the possibility of stealing away comes when we invoke the thief in our lives. The acharyas give us the process of chanting the holy names, but the holy names have to be chanted in a way which is non-offensive. In a way where we are keeping our negative tendencies lower and exposing our positive tendencies to Krishna consciousness. So let us remember this whole episode. And if we want to experience going back to Bhandira tree, and if we want to experience the rains that are waiting for us, we need to take shelter of Krishna in the right mood. Hare Krishna. It's already late. I'm sorry. I've gone over time. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Gracias.